Welcome to The Brains Behind It, the official podcast of BrainHackers.com. The source for smart strategies to improve your life, one brain hack at a time. In this podcast, we talk to the leaders and innovators behind great organizations and find out the secret to their success. Here's your host, editor-in-chief of BrainHackers.com and two-time Guinness record holder for memory, Dave Farrow.
Hey there, brain hackers. I got another Brains Behind It for you. I'm talking here today with Deirdre Breckenridge, who's CEO and founder of Pure Performance Communications. It's found at pureperformancecom.com. Now, I'm super interested in this because, as you know, as you probably know, I run Farrow Communications, and that I am the Farrow in the Farrow Communications part. And I've really enjoyed over the last number of years, I've really enjoyed getting into PR campaigns and figuring out marketing as I've been doing on this show. So we're going to have a great discussion. We'll get started right after this. Hey, Deirdre, welcome to the show.
Hi, Dave. Thanks. Great to be here.
Hey, so I'm super excited about this because I'm usually talking to startups about PR. And now it's a PR person to a PR person. And one of the first things I want to share with you is I got into PR essentially accidentally. I never intended to. I just basically was hustling for my own product. And proud to say, estimated sales in 10 million worldwide is a huge success, especially for like a course-based product, an intellectual product. And I'm thankful to have backers for infomercial, and I did some QVC stuff. So that's where you get a lot of those numbers from. But, you know, it started with just getting my message out there and getting some PR. And I'm usually the one that people are picking their brain for PR. And I know you have this amazing backstory and book and everything. So tell me how you got into communications and consulting, what you were doing before, whatever you want to share with us, and you know, why you do this.
So first of all, I love that you said that you were hustling.
I was just trying to make a buck. I was trying to sell, and in order to do that, getting on TV and radio, that's a great way to do that. And then people said, hey, how did you do this? And I started teaching them and showing them and then doing it for them. And I got 8 employees later and a PR business, you know, but never intended to get into it.
Well, you know, it's funny because I didn't know about PR, but I found out about it in high school. Literally, I won an essay contest. My guidance counselor said, you need to go into journalism or public relations.
You were like, what's public relations?
What is public relations? And, you know, it was basically explained that it was all about communicating messages and working with the media. And I thought, you know what? This sounds good. I went right off to college, declared my major in communications and public relations, and just stuck with it. I mean, I got my MBA along the way, but I love what I've been doing. I live, breathe, sleep, eat public relations and marketing. And it just kind of shows in the way that I've built businesses, how I've transitioned over to Pure Performance, and all of the great things that I'm doing with clients.
All right. So brag a little bit. Tell us some of your biggest accomplishments in what you've done. I know you've had some exits. I don't want to give away anything you don't want to give away, but you've had some successful businesses you built up from nothing and exited. So brag a little bit so people know that the words that are coming out of your mouth are coming from experience and skill.
So I was always working for somebody else, right? It was one of those things when I came out of college. For 10 years, I was agency world. I tried in-house for all of a year or so and couldn't hack it. I went back to agency. And when I was with...
So by that, you mean in-house inside a company?
Yeah.
Just explain to people who don't yes. know the terms.
So in-house is when you work for a brand. And I was doing work for, believe it or not, a cosmetology school that was tied to a big Sebastian dealership. Sebastian was a hair and skincare company.
Okay, cool.
So I tried that for a little while and I didn't like it. So being in the agency world, you get experience in all different industries. You have to understand your clients, the market, the media. So I really love that. And I was working for a little agency and it was mostly based on pharmaceutical marketing, branding, and public relations. And my boss would say to me, well, it's Memorial Day and I'm headed to the shore. You hold down the fort, run the business, and I'll see you after Labor Day. And I kind of had this big aha moment. I never thought that I was going to be an entrepreneur. I shocked my family. They had no idea where this came from. And I just said, hey, if I can do this for somebody else, why wouldn't I do it for myself? And I did. I shifted very quickly. I took on my boss and all of his clients as he became my client. And then it was...
So it wasn't an adversarial thing. He was retiring or something, right?
He wasn't retiring. It was a bit of a shock to him.
Okay.
But he still needed me so right. much that we were just able to transition the relationship to I was now his partner. I was a partnering company.
Excellent.
I don't want to say a vendor because it's not. It's more about being an extension of somebody's marketing team.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. In fact, I wish sometimes the PR firms were run more like they do legal firms, you know, where somebody can join on. And if they do all the right things, they can, quote unquote, make partner. And then the firm is, you know, has several people's names in it. And that's what you want to do, because then you get stock options and things like that. It's something that I've been considering over here. Even, you know, we're still fairly boutique, but we're growing fast. And it's something that I wish more people did. So you basically went to your boss and negotiated to be an entrepreneur. That is, I've never heard of that story ever. So that, good on you. Fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah. And it just led to, I built this little company that was quickly eaten up by a larger marketing public relations firm. It was three different divisions. It was PR communications, creative marketing, and web and multimedia. Mm-hmm. And what happened was I was doing their public relations for two 27-year-old founders of the company. And all of a sudden I had them speaking nationally. And they were, you know, on the cover of, I think it was a Small Business Entrepreneur. And they said, wow, we want you to be, you know, take on ownership in the company. I would be a third partner. And the rest was history. Built up that company, then kind of transitioned over to a more digital PR hybrid company. And then, you know, built, and then said, I want to design my career. Now it's time to switch over. I want to do consulting. And that's what I do today, communications consulting.
Now, do you think that, and it's fascinating, it's very admirable, everything you've done. Do you think that young people kind of miss out on that sort of lessons? Because I know a handful of people like you who have done that, quite a few people, I guess, in my network now. But I always think back to when I first started out, when I was in my 20s and I didn't know anything. And I honestly didn't even know the industry existed. I didn't know public speaking was a thing too. And now I'm a high paid public speaker. I don't know. I'm really into education. I really think that, you know, maybe some more of these more entrepreneurial things should be taught in K-12. Like, we should reach kids when they're younger to let them know that, you know, A, the economy is changing, and that there's a whole bunch of careers out there that you probably are incredibly skilled at that you don't even know exist, you know? Because we're just funneled into these things.
Yeah, absolutely. There was nothing ever when I was in school or even in college that looked like entrepreneurship. And I'm going back in the 80s, so it was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But that would be so great to know that that's an option. What you are seeing with younger professionals is their passion just become these side hustles.
Yeah.
Right? And then the side hustle becomes the business. And, you know, I have a podcast called Women Worldwide, and I've had a lot of guests on the show who say that, you know, I had a booming business, but you know what? I launched something else out of passion. And the next thing I knew, I had to put 100% behind it because it was growing and it was something that I really wanted to do.
Yeah. So I'm hoping for the same thing. We talked about the robots when we were off the air, but this is my robot I'm working on.
Wow, that's so
and
cool.
It's a full animatronic mannequin. This was my hobby. This is one of the prototypes for the hands. It looks weird than it is, but it's just look at the nails. Look at these nails. Beautiful.
Oh my gosh.
Anyways, I obviously I'm really passionate about it. It's my Mona Lisa. But now I'm looking at it and I'm looking at potentially getting a million plus investment for it and you know, giving away some of the rights for it and you know, building it up, it could be worth, you know, billions even. And some of these numbers just blow my mind, because this was my side project, because I had to work with my hands because I love robotics and the PR business was great, but it was all theoretical, and I do woodworking. It was like a creative outlet, and it became could become bigger than anything I've ever done, you know, maybe not, but like follow that passion.
This is what I call passion potential. Okay.
Nice.
And I feel like I've found mine and you've found yours.
Yeah.
Passion potential is really understanding what you love to do, and you would, not that you would do it for free, but it's so much fun and it's so creative that you would do it for free, but it just so happens that everybody needs what you're doing and they're going to pay for it.
I actually have done the robotics for free. I worked as a design engineer for some people for many years, and I did you know, some design for money. I've done it professionally, but I've also been involved in like cosplay for years. I met my wife at a Star Trek convention, and so I built like a whole Transformer costume, Bumblebee, and a bunch of other cool stuff, and I did that for free for the creative love of it. You know,
oh, I love that.
So what do you think? So here's where I think a lot of people get stopped. They look at us and they think, okay, you're privileged. It's great that you know, you hit the genetic lottery and everything fell in place for you, and oh, you get to live your passion, but that's not the reality for most people. And I want to make it clear though, that of course it may never be the reality for everybody, but I think that another thing that we want to make clear is I'm in my 40s. And I certainly did not, I had a very rocky road to get to here, nearly going bankrupt a couple times and had a very tough time going up there. So I think my message, I'd love to hear your message to young people is to be patient and to realize that, yeah, sometimes you don't really hit your stride till you're 40. And that's just because it takes so long to do something worthwhile. What would you say to young people if, you know, to your younger self? Because I had that same frustration looking at people like me now going, what the heck? I just need that happiness, and I didn't have it.
Yeah, I mean, when you're building something great, it takes time. And you need that passion requires such focus and patience, and you're going to get knocked down more times than you're going to feel like you get built up. And it was not a smooth road for me either. I mean, in between the time that I started out in the late 80s until now, I mean, I had a really bad marriage that fell apart. Oh. I was a solo mom, and the bad marriage affected a business. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes you got a lot of balls in the air, and some of them drop, and you trust people that you shouldn't, and you make mistakes, and it's really hard. I've also faced health issues because of Lyme disease. And that's big, you know, for 8 months, it went undetected. So there's going to be
that just builds up. That's terrible.
Yeah, it was horrible. But the thing is that you just learn to deal with this, and you learn about yourself and your own strength. And, you know, it's your dream and it's what you make of it. It's not going to be a straight path. That would not be realistic. Yeah. If you talk to most entrepreneurs, they're going to say, oh my gosh, I had this failure and that failure and this bankruptcy. It's what you learn and what you take forward. And I think I wouldn't have any do-overs.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm sorry to hear about the mental illness of your ex-husband there, because he'd have to be crazy to leave you.
Oh, well, thank you.
All right. Yeah. In all honesty, the stats actually back up everything that you're saying, though. There's a recent article in FEE, Financial Foundation for Education, Economic Education. I love reading their stuff, FEE.org. And they did this one little analysis released by, you know, some European agencies and around the world and stuff, and found that basically the list of rich people today is bigger than ever. We know that. But for it's followed a very clear trend that more people have gone from poor and middle class to rich today than ever before in history, a higher percentage of people. So there's a very, very small percentage of people who basically the lucky sperm club, essentially, that, you know, you're in a family that was wealthy, silver spoon. Yeah, that sort of thing. And I think that that's something that needs to be said, because there's so much rhetoric right now around every person who has wealth is like born into it. And that's just not the case. The vast majority of people who are incredibly wealthy started off poor or middle class. You know, and I mean, one of my biggest inspiration is Oprah. A lot of people don't realize she was a teenage mom. She was homeless at one time, like abusive household that she went to in abject poverty. And you know, she did not let any of that, you know, hold her back, but she got super motivated, and now she like I think runs the world. She's like one of the chairs of the Illuminati, I'm pretty sure. She's like, yeah, and it's like, and if she can do that, then it's not, you can't say anybody can, but if she can do that, then there, we do have a society where people, you know, much more is probably possible than we ever give ourselves credit for, I think.
Right, and look at how technology helps.
Yeah, actually, yeah, what you're saying, we were talking about, you know, young people. And yeah, I was thinking the curriculum, the school system should have kids running their own business. But like you said, you know, Etsy, Fiverr, all these things, young people are doing side hustles in their preteens.
Absolutely. Know? I mean, also the social media has leveled the playing field when it comes to building relationships, who you can meet. I feel like you're 6 degrees of separation away from anybody on Twitter. You just have to keep digging in to who's around you and leveraging relationships. The ability to create so much content that every company is a media company, which really means you can get your messages out there and you can be helpful and your content can, you know, create engagement in ways that push people through the funnel so much more quickly.
Now, well, actually, let's talk about that. One of the things I like to talk about here is kind of where the psychology or brain science meets marketing. So as a consultant, I had another consultant on a little while ago, and we were talking about the biggest challenge is getting clients. I actually had a twofold question for you, because you had a company that was acquired, and I always find that fascinating because you know, in my business, at least, I'm involved in the hustle of getting new clients tremendously. You know, a lot of people come on board because of my reputation as well. And I'm not even sure if I could ever, I mean, I guess at some point you have systems in place and I could do an exit, but it just doesn't seem feasible. And I'm wondering, you know, if somebody acquires your business, what happens to the clients? Like, is it possible that some of the fear is that the clients will go, this person was acquired, so we're going to jump ship, and does that sort of thing happen? Or how do you get the clients in the first place? And is it a process that you used to get something stable enough that can be acquired? Because a lot of businesses like this can't be.
So it is your pipeline. There's no doubt about it. When a company is looking to acquire you, they're looking for, of course, your expertise as a thought leader, but it's who you bring along, because that same business that acquired me, that was our growth strategy. As a partner in that business, as a third owner that I bought into, we were acquiring other businesses to bring on new clients to get into new industries. So it is a lot about what you bring to the table. However, you always have to recognize that your clients that you're bringing over through an acquisition, they don't want you to go away. If anything, you still need to be over their accounts, but you can get them really excited about all of the new services that they might find as opportunities for their business. Mm-hmm. Because my little company was strictly focused on public relations when I started out, and being acquired by a marketing communications firm, then all my clients were able to get video and web because I didn't have that. And it was seamless for them. They had opportunities to get involved in more creative and advertising, which I didn't offer. So it's a way of positioning it to make them know that you're still there. You're a part of it and you're going to get so much more.
Yeah, I was wondering about that because, you know, when you're being acquired, is there a fear that like so you're acquiring a company, a big part of that company comes with is the clients, but you don't own the clients. It's not like another sort of asset. Those guys can just decide one day we're gone and, you know, do whatever it takes to break the contract or whatever. But, you know, you don't own it like you own stock or you own an asset or you own a technology or intellectual property. So, is that part of the plan of, you know, someone's going to acquire this company, but we're going to take steps to prepare the clientele to make sure that they're excited about it, that we're not going to lose? And is there some atrophy that's expected? Are you expected to lose some people in the acquiring?
Yes. So there is definitely the expectation that you will lose a couple along the way. But what you said about that communication, and we're communicators, we know it's how you're going to position the acquisition and what you're going into and what you're becoming a part of. Mm-hmm. And that communication and them feeling comfortable about what you're joining is a huge part of it. I mean, I remember we did, whether it was our digital communications, it was our in-person event to invite clients to the new offices where mm-hmm. my company was going to be with the company that had acquired me, and getting them to feel comfortable. So that is all a part of the process. What is your plan around the communications? And how are you also going to let the market know that, I mean, that's news in and of itself as an agency?
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And so what would you say is the kind of clientele that you go after? Is it mid caps, large caps? Is it individuals? What's your main client base? And how would you say is your strategy to get more clients, to keep a pipeline going?
So I've had, I mean, last year I worked with NASDAQ. They're huge, right? Mm-hmm. I was doing content marketing for them. But at the same time, I also work with other agencies where they have a managing partner that needs more brand awareness, thought leadership, needs to get out, do some media relations and influencer relations. So you see the difference right there. Mm-hmm. I'm doing some things with some really large companies, but yet I'm also working with executives. So yeah. I don't necessarily say I'm only going to work with large companies or it's only mid caps. I think it's more about where I can lend my expertise and where I can help the most. And if my background suits those companies. So for example, with NASDAQ, I was working with their PR and digital media services business. That is a strength in my background. So it was a natural fit to be doing a content marketing program, working with influencers. We created a show out of NASDAQ Market Site where it was a live broadcast show. At the same time, working with agencies, look at my background. I've been agencies for 29 of 30 years. So it has to make sense. And it's also my contacts. I am a chief relationship agent. So what I bring to the table are the relationships that I've forged over the years and how it makes sense for an executive or a business to take advantage of those relationships.
Yeah, well, that's actually what I wanted to ask is how I want to kind of have this as instructional. Maybe I'll get some tips myself, so I'd love to hear. But also, I want, you know, these interviews to kind of appeal to people who are starting out, you know, in the startup phase, and they have a skill set. Maybe they, you know, are a designer or something, but the business side just mystifies them. I find a lot of people, there's no really, really good education on sales that I would be happy with. You know, there's no one source. You know, you can't go to college on sales. You know, you can certainly go on marketing, but that, as we know, is a very different thing. A lot of people learn in the field. So what would you say to somebody who doesn't have your connections but wants to get them? How do you get connections like with something like NASDAQ, which is a great get? And I'm fascinated. There's a lot of agencies that have one client. You know, like I know an agency that NASCAR is their right. client. You know, yeah. and things like that. So is it just who you know, or is there a strategy that you would use? What strategy do you use?
So I've always been a major networker. It's all about networking. And it's not just swapping a business card back in the day, but being able to find the best relationships and scale the right ones. And it's the same thing that I do today. I just wrote a book called Answers for Modern Communicators, and it's a guide to effective business communication. And it's a Q&A book. And a lot of the questions are around, you know, how do you build relationships? How do you scale them? You know, you have to be everywhere. No. You don't. You only have so much time in a day, but if you're an entrepreneur, then you definitely have to be getting yourself out there, and sales just has to be a part of your DNA. And I just believe that you can carve out time. There's ways to network through social media that's meaningful on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is a place that drives business.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. Is a lot of people say that that's what everybody should be doing, but yeah, I got a few clients going to a networking function in New York not too long
ago. That's okay too. You know? No, I'm a little bit of both. I have my in person, and I also have my social media networking. What I'm finding is that social media is the great door opener, and you can begin to carve out a relationship that you never thought would happen, which then you want to move that. You have goals. So if you're going to do social media networking, set some goals for yourself, who you want to meet, how many contacts you're going to move into a private space so that you can talk to them, not publicly, then go to email, then go get a cup of coffee. The goal is to maybe start with social media, but then to get into the physical realm where you shake a hand.
So would you say that, hey, if you look at a company that you want to have as a client, you just try to find the person who has the title that you're looking for, VP of sales or something like that. And like, are you a fan of cold outreach like that? I've done a lot of cold outreach with a lot of success, but I admit, you know, being able to say, you know, my claim to fame of being Guinness record holder, it's a big door opener. So I'm like, hey, if you want to pick my brain or chat about something, I get a lot of responses that I know I would not get if I didn't have that. So obviously play to your strengths. If you've got something, I know somebody who is a former athlete, plays to that and does really well opening doors. But if you don't have something like that, is there a way that you can do a cold open to a VIP candidate? Would you suggest that to people or not?
So I would more look for ways to engage with people. Social media is all around like-mindedness and passion, right? You're going to connect in groups and you're going to have conversations. You can pretty much talk to anyone. I remember wanting to meet Jimmy Wales, founder of Wikipedia. I wanted to have him in my book, and all it took was being on Facebook and figuring out what he cared about, what he was passionate about. And then we connected over something, over a cause. And next thing I knew, I was having lunch with Jimmy in New York.
Nice. So you'd recommend maybe comment on a Facebook post they liked or something, and like get part of a conversation that's more natural instead of just kind of a direct sales outreach type approach.
Yeah, if you connect over something that you're both passionate about, or that you had, it's always adding value to the conversation. So in other words, I remember there was a big social media business guru who was always top of the Forbes social media lists, and I really wanted to meet him. And, you know, step number one, if you have a blogger or somebody who is putting out a lot of content, that is an opportunity to rally around the content, share opinions, jump into community discussions. It's not something where you're going to say, oh, hey, I love your post. It has to be meaningful. So you have to dive into the conversation. And I remember with this particular influencer, I was in his community, getting hopefully recognized, which I think I was. And then I would take his blog posts and I would go out to Twitter, and I would start sharing them and commenting around them and putting hashtags and getting my communities to talk about his post. Next thing I knew, he said, at Deep Breckenridge, that's my handle on Twitter, follow me.
Nice plug, like it.
He said, at Deep Breckenridge, who are you and where the hell are you? I want to meet you.
That's awesome.
Sure enough, we did meet, and he invited me to speak at one of his conferences, an inbound marketing summit in Boston. And we've since collaborated. So that is just an example of, if there's somebody that you want to meet, sometimes you have to take the time to get, it's just like media relations, Dave, right? Mm-hmm. You're not just going to go and send something to a member of the media. You really want to know about them. How do they, what do they care about? What's their beat? Applying the same principle with people through social media.
Yeah, and some people are masterful at that, and some people aren't. I bow to your wisdom on this. It's not. I will say, if it's face to face or something, I can work a room and I do really well that way. But I think I don't have the patience sometimes to do some of the kind of online you know, connecting and working together. I think, I guess just, you know, play to your strengths. You know, what is your passion? I mean, when I think about it, I have actually connected on some similar topics with some people, but, you know, someone tries to connect with me on, say, like, sports or something, and I'm completely lost, you know, so I guess it really does depend.
I might be a little lost too.
Yeah, there you go. So, I mean, I guess it really does depend on the situation, depends on the lead, but
works. It really works. If you play to your passion, so my passion is around media and technology and, you know, how mm-hmm. reputation management and all of the things that sort of move businesses to be, and their professionals to be, modern communicators. Mm-hmm. It was LinkedIn, or it was really Linda, that approached me because I was out on social media sharing content and engaged in conversations. And yeah, I mean, I did have, I guess at the time, a Twitter following of probably around 20,000. But Linda, which is now LinkedIn Learning, reached out to me and said, hey, how would you like to be a Linda author? Which, neat. I mean, that was a wonderful opportunity to take my book authoring to video authoring and training. And now that LinkedIn has acquired Linda, I have a platform of hundreds of thousands of business professionals who have access to my training courses. That was because of social media and mm-hmm. conversation. So you just don't know how it's going to, you're giving a lot and people say, oh my gosh, why are you giving mm-hmm. so much? You know, maybe you should be paid for this. You know what? It comes back.
And actually, yeah, that's a really good point. The entrepreneurial life is you work for free for the first half and then you get paid extremely well for the second half.
Right.
And you're willing to give. Sometimes you don't know when which half you're on. Maybe you're in the transition, but it's all free and passion up front, and that's kind of a test to see if you're really serious. And most people quit too soon, and then you're moving on after that. That is really fascinating. I especially like the path you did with Linda. I think I was planning on ordering a copy of your book. I love the question and answer style of book, so it makes for an easier read. So I'll definitely recommend that for people. And I think my big passion would be that's one of the reasons why I decided to do this show. I wanted to, you know, do content, but I didn't want to just write articles all day. It wasn't I'm not like the preachy type. I'm more interactive. And so I wanted to kind of combine the neuroscience and the brain and psychology and all that interesting stuff with marketing. And that's why I wanted to do this. And I think that it's been really
that's
successful
great.
for me. So you would recommend that sort of thing where for you, it was fitting into your brand and your strengths and playing to your strengths for this. We're doing my strengths. And so I guess, you know, one of the best things the people who are just starting out can really ask themselves, what are your strengths? I ask this of young people all the time, whenever I go to a school to speak is what do you do? What do you find easy to do? I think that's a better way to say it. What do you find easy to do that other people struggle with? And what are you very skilled at that other people, you know, just don't do as well?
Exactly. That is the number one question to be asked and answered. And I think for me, it started with writing back in high school. Somebody recognized it. And I have been just blessed with an opportunity to be an author early on in my career. And that's why, whether I was making mistakes or there was failure in business, it didn't matter, because I got my first book deal in 1999, where, wow. You know, I had dreamed of things. I had dreamed of being an author. I remember sitting, I was only an intern, and I was on a media tour with an economist who had written a book. And it must have been a very busy day at my agency, because they sent the intern out with the client. I had gotten him most of the placements and the places that we needed to go, the coverage. And he said to me, we were sitting at a famous hotel for writers called the Algonquin. And he said, you know what? Someday you're going to be a writer. And I said, oh my gosh, thank you. Someday, like maybe, you know, way at the end of my career, I could be an author. You know what?
And then the following year you did something, right?
It took about 10 years after that point, but that was a lot sooner. But I hit that I love to write. And that's turned into, okay, so there's book authoring, there's the videos, which are writing scripts.
Yeah.
I do a lot of you know, my I'm turning my passion from the writing into the speaking engagements, which also turns into the consulting, but it all came from the love of writing.
That's fantastic. So, so you can also, I mean, I'm a dad. So my son is like 4 years old, and ever since he came along, I start to think of these sorts of questions, like what do you want to say to the next the younger generation? What do you want to say to younger people? And I think that almost at any age, you can really ask yourself that: what skills, you know, do you really enjoy and do you really have? So you were a writer from the beginning, and really, it sounded like you just needed the confidence, you just needed a little bit of a boost to get there. And yeah, once you publish that book, it's an asset in terms of your business life that builds up.
Definitely. And don't let anybody stop your dreams. When I actually told my family that I was going to write a book for Prentice Hall, and it was going to be a 450-page book called Cyber Branding. And this was back in 1999. They looked at me and said, "You don't know how to write a book." And I said, "I don't know how, but I'm going to figure it out."
Oh, I got you beat. When I first went for my Guinness record, I was 20 years old, and I had family members bet money that I would fail.
Oh no.
And I only had my best friend at the time and my girlfriend at the time who thought I could actually do it. And everyone else said I couldn't. Now, the funny thing is the first time I did fail, because it's a Guinness record. It's the toughest thing in the world to do. But in failing, I knew exactly what I had to do to succeed. And I was going to go back a month later to do it. But I had to go back home and talk to every single person who said, "I told you so, I told you so, I told you so."
And but that you didn't give up.
Well, the person who bet money, I asked them double or nothing. And
nice.
Yeah, I made like $50. It was awesome.
Oh, that's great.
After I went back, and clearly I succeeded in the end. But I didn't tell people that I failed for the longest time because I was so ashamed, because I thought every successful person, they get it right the first time. And oh, how terrible I was to not get it right. Like, it's amazing how hard on ourselves we are, you know?
Oh, yeah, well, entrepreneurs are also known for that. Yeah. That's another thing to tell my younger self. Don't beat yourself up.
Yeah, if you're a perfectionist and you're kind of really hard on yourself and narcissistic, then you might be an entrepreneur.
Exactly. But now I believe, you know what? Perfection is just not happening. 80% is good, because that 20% might not matter anyway.
Oh, Liz, I dream of 80%. Oh my. I dream of 50% sometimes, you know, when I see some works in progress and I've been working on a project for ages, you know, to get things off the ground. Yeah. Now I dream of 50% right. Sometimes.
Exactly. And I think that's what leaders do. I know lots of C-level executives who say, "I would rather see my team roll out with something at 80%. Mm-hmm. Because you know what? Waiting to get to that 100, it is not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Hey, talk about a team a little bit. And what sort of people, I found personally, you know, I hire to my weaknesses and their strengths, you know, that we were not stepping on each other's toes. And I can have stronger strengths if they are covering some of my weaknesses too. What's your strategy when you're, you know, smaller business and hiring for the first time?
That's exactly my strategy. But first, it's understanding what you're good at and that you can easily do, and what you're not good at. And I think for entrepreneurs, it's really hard to say, "I'm not good at this." But right?
You've got to really be honest with yourself. And you're financially punished if you're not. There's no other area.
Exactly.
That like you can be fooling other people. You can lie to everybody. But if you're lying to yourself, you're broke.
Yeah, exactly. And you can't be all things to everybody. No. I see that a lot with creatives who and being in the agency world, you're around creative people. And rather than just focus on the creativity for a purpose, sometimes that creativity goes so far into areas and you're like, no. It's like, we've got a bottle of Coca-Cola. And the next thing you're doing is you're marketing the bottle of Coke and the table and the chairs that are, you have to keep your focus, not creativity for the sake of creativity.
All right. So what's your best marketing hook ever? What's the best hook you've ever had for marketing?
So I think it really is the fact that I can say I wrote the book on it. When it comes to public relations and all the changes that have happened as a result in social media, I can say I wrote Putting the Public Back in Public Relations, and I wrote PR2.0, which are two books that addressed changes in the market. When it people say, oh my gosh, there's so much change going on and how do you communicate effectively in business? I say, I just wrote a book called Answers for Modern Communicators. Those books have been a really big hook.
That's fantastic. Well, I think that's great advice. And anybody, and the other great thing about it is that, so many people say, oh, I can't start a business because I don't have funds. I don't have money. I didn't start with any money myself.
No. You know?
But
I started with a fax machine.
Yeah, but everybody
in a fax machine. That was fax machine. How long ago? Fax machine.
What's that? I don't know. No, I'm kidding. No. My first memory program was cassettes. So shut the front door. Yeah, I sold them for $127 each for a cassette set. And then I remember my first CD burner cost me $400. I kid you not.
What an investment.
$400. I made it back in a weekend. But it was hustling, you know, hustling. And then that built up. I kind of got off track, but technology, it's great. The younger people will never know the amazing relationship between a number two pencil and a cassette tape. You know? they won't know the beauty of rewinding.
Right. That's hysterical.
You know what I'm saying, you know? Look, Google it, kids. Just Google it. That's all.
Exactly.
It's been wonderful talking to you, and it's great to get into the mindset of the brains behind it in a lot of ways. You know, you're the marketing brains behind so many other, you know, different things and different brands. I honestly love talking to you. I would love to work with you on a project sometime if there's any way to do it. But I want to thank you very much for being on the show. This has been fantastic. Do you have any parting thoughts at all for being on the show? And by the way, I'm taking your notes on everything you've been saying from you know, writing, from building relationships, you know, finding common interests from people. I'm absorbing it all in. So any final thoughts for people?
Well, thank you so much. And just to say that you have to follow your passion. Don't let anybody around you, like you said, Dave, they were betting against you. There's lots of people who are going to bet against you. And the more you get out there, there's always going to be some kind of friction or something that's going to try to stop you. Don't let it happen and trust your gut. That's the biggest thing. Trust your gut.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because ultimately, if you do something based on someone else's opinion. You get all sorts of opinion from all sorts of people who've never run a business, by the way, once you start a business.
Right.
Everyone. And it's the toughest thing because these are people you love and respect. They're good friends of yours, but they don't realize what they're asking you. You're going to put your money on the line to do that thing. And if it fails, they're not going to pay you.
No.
Right? It's on your shoulders, but they get offended. So later on, if their idea would have worked and what you tried fails, then they say, I told you so. But ultimately, you still have to do it your way because it's better to fail and have it be your idea than if you fail and it was someone else's idea and it really wasn't what you thought. It is so soul-wrenching because you're like,
oh, exactly.
I didn't even want to do it this way in the first place. Right. I just didn't trust myself, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, trust yourself. That's the best advice. This has been great. Thank you so much.
This has been wonderful. We went in so many different directions. This is wonderful. So tell the name of your book again. I want everyone to go on Amazon and read it. If you read the virtual version, you have to download it and scroll through all the pages before you do a review because Amazon knows how much you've been reading. Think about how creepy that is. but yeah, tell
Amazon's gonna run the world. So it's Answers for Modern Communicators, a guide for successful business communication.
All right, and this is Deirdre Breckenridge. You are definitely a brains behind it. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brains Behind It. And remember to check out brainhackers.com for more. If you have a suggestion for the next interview or comment, please email editor@brainhackers.com. If you want a free 30-minute marketing consultation from Dave Farrow and his team, then email editor@brainhackers.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.